Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear from Brian Lynn, Ann Ball, and Katie Weaver. Later, we will present our American history series, The Making of a Nation. But first, the First Lady of the United States, Melania Trump, is celebrating American patriotism at the White House this Christmas. She has also honored American design, inventions, and buildings. The traditional gingerbread White House sits beside the Statue of Liberty and Golden Gate Bridge. It is with great joy that our family welcomes you to the White House this holiday season as we celebrate the spirit of America, President Donald Trump and his family say in a signed book that visitors will receive. We hope you enjoy our tribute to the traditions, customs, and history that make our nation great. White House officials showed the decorations to reporters on Monday before the President and the First Lady traveled to London. Reporters also were permitted into the Naval Observatory, the official home of the U.S. Vice President in Northwest Washington, D.C. Part of the White House is lined with glass panels etched with more than 60 examples of American design, innovation, and architecture. They include structures like the Woolworth Building in New York City and the Space Needle in Seattle. A Christmas tree honors Gold Star families that lost a relative during military service. It stands at the beginning of the hallway, while a second tree is decorated with the Trump family ornament, an American flag. East room decorations are inspired by the U.S. flag and have red and blue ribbons and golden eagles on top of the Christmas trees. In the state dining room, American design is highlighted. The gingerbread White House, covered with 11 kilograms of icing and 16 kilograms of chocolate, reproduces the South Portico, including a staircase made using spaghetti. The Blue Room holds a tree 5 meters tall brought from a farm in the state of Pennsylvania. It is decorated with flowers representing every state and U.S. territory. Mrs. Trump continues her tradition of hanging wreaths on all 106 windows at the White House. Late Sunday, she showed Twitter followers a short video of some of the decorations as she walked through the state floor of the White House. More than 225 volunteers came from around the country to help decorate the White House during Thanksgiving weekend. Decorations in the public areas include 58 Christmas trees and more than 2,500 groups of light. The Naval Observatory is home to Vice President Mike Pence and his wife, Karen. More than 40 volunteers decorated the Pence's residence using 640 meters of white lights and 7 trees from a farm in Belvedere, New Jersey. Mrs. Pence said the decorations show the rich history of the residence and highlights the beauty of the special house that we are blessed to call home.
The United Nations Weather Agency says the past 10 years were likely the hottest decade since scientists began keeping records. In a new report, the World Meteorological Organization, or WMO, blames the rising temperatures mainly on greenhouse gases produced by human activities. Average temperatures for the 5-year 2015 to 2019 and 10-year 2010 to 2019 periods are almost certain to be the highest on record, the WMO said. The report predicted that 2019 would become the second or third warmest year on record. Final temperature measurements will not be available for several months. Petri Tallis is the Secretary General of the WMO. He says severe heat waves and floods that used to happen about once every 100 years have become regular events. Countries ranging from the Bahamas to Japan to Mozambique suffered the effect of devastating tropical cyclones. Wildfires swept through the Arctic and Australia, he noted. Tallis said that one of the main effects of climate change is the lack of predictable rainfall. This presents a threat to successful harvests and will likely create food security problems in some countries in the future, he said. The report said climate change was a main driver of a recent increase in world hunger after 10 years of decrease. It estimated that about 820 million people suffered from hunger in 2018. The WMO said that weather disasters have displaced millions of people this year and affected rainfall from India to northern Russia to the central United States and other areas. Oceans, which take in an estimated 90% of the extra heat produced by greenhouse gases, are now at their highest recorded temperatures. Seawater is also 25% more acidic than it was 150 years ago, the report said. This is threatening ocean environments that provide food and jobs for billions of people. Levels of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere reached a record 407.8 parts per million in 2018 and continued to rise in 2019. Experts say carbon dioxide can be damaging because it can remain in the atmosphere for hundreds of years and in the ocean for even longer. On Monday, at the opening of a climate meeting in Spain, United Nations Secretary General Antonio Guterres warned that 400 parts per million had once been considered unthinkable. The UN Climate Change Conference brings together representatives from around the world to seek solutions to reduce greenhouse gas emissions. I'm Brian Lynn.
Students from China and Singapore came out on top in an international survey of educational achievement. results of the 2018 Program for International Student Assessment, or PISA, were released Tuesday. The test is given every 3 years to 15-year-olds around the world. It measures their knowledge in reading, science, and mathematics. The best performing students in all three subjects were in China. They attend schools in and around Beijing and Shanghai, and two provinces, Jiangsu and Zhejiang. Singapore finished in fifth place in the study. Overall, the test results show American students scoring above average in reading and science, but below average in math. The test is administered by the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development, or OECD. Officials reported that about 600,000 students in 79 nations and educational systems took part in the two-hour computer-based exam last year. They said schools in each country are chosen randomly to make sure that students come from a wide mix of backgrounds and abilities. PISA is the largest measure of international education performance. The test scores are watched closely by education policymakers.
Here are some of the PISA findings. The average U.S. scores have not changed in a major way in any of the three subjects since 2015. The U.S. scores are mostly unchanged since when the test was first given in 2000 for reading and in 2003 for math. American science scores have risen since 2006. Out of the 79 areas, only 7 have seen an improvement in their PISA scores since they started offering the test. The 7 are Albania, Colombia, Macau, Moldova, Peru, Portugal, and Qatar. The OECD is a group of 36 mostly industrial countries, including the United States. Financing, the amount of money spent on education, is important, but not always necessary for high test scores. Take Estonia, for example. It was one of the top scoring countries, yet education spending there is 30% below the OECD average. With reading being the main focus of the test this year, one of every 4 students in OECD countries could not complete basic reading tasks. On average, across the OECD countries, 1 in 10 disadvantaged students was able to score in the top quarter of the reading performance of their country.
The U.S. results showed that the highest performing students were doing better in reading and math, while the lower performing students did not improve. This is similar to results from another nationwide test, the National Assessment of Educational Progress. It's another red flag that this is something to think about, said Peggy Carr, the Associate Commissioner for the National Center for Education Statistics. She noted that the United States is clearly struggling in math. What is not clear about the group of Chinese students tested is whether they represent all Chinese students. Carr noted that the 4 test areas are home to more wealthy people than China as a whole. the Chinese areas displaced the top school system in the 2015 PISA, the Asian city-state of Singapore.
Tom Lovelace, an educational researcher from California, said the Chinese provinces that were tested saw a substantial increase in their scores. He said China is the only country where the national government chooses the provinces that are tested. It still makes it very difficult to interpret the Chinese scores, he said. Lovelace describes the overall performance of American students as mediocre. The U.S. is basically doing what it's done since PISA started, which is hanging around the middle of the group, he said. Andreas Schleicher is director for the OECD's Directorate of Education and Skills. He said there is hope for countries where there is not much difference in the performance of students from wealthy and poor backgrounds. Education, he says, remains a way for poor children in some countries to be successful. I'm Katie Weaver.
And I'm Ann Ball.
Welcome to The Making of a Nation, American History in VOA Special English. The Civil War began in 1861 as a struggle over the right of states to leave the Union. President Abraham Lincoln firmly believed that a state did not have that right, and he declared war on the southern states that tried to leave. Lincoln had only one reason to fight, to save the Union. In time, however, there was another reason to fight, to free the black people held as slaves in the South. Today, Kay Gallant and Harry Monroe continue the story of how President Lincoln dealt with this issue.
Lincoln had tried to keep the issue of slavery out of the war. He feared it would weaken the Northern war effort. Many men throughout the North would fight to save the Union. They would not fight to free the slaves. Lincoln also needed the support of the four slave states that had not left the Union: Delaware, Kentucky, Maryland, and Missouri. He could not be sure of their support if he declared that the purpose of the war was to free the slaves. Lincoln was able to follow this policy at first, but the war to save the Union was going badly. The North had not won a decisive victory in Virginia, the heart of the Confederacy. To guarantee continued support for the war, Lincoln was forced to recognize that the issue of slavery was, in fact, a major issue. And on September 22, 1862, he announced a new policy on slavery in the rebel southern states. His announcement became known as the Emancipation Proclamation.
American newspapers printed the proclamation. This is what it said: I, Abraham Lincoln, President of the United States and Commander-in-Chief of the Army and Navy, do hereby declare that on the first day of January, 1863, all persons held as slaves within any state then in rebellion against the United States shall then become and be forever free. The government of the United States, including the military and naval forces, will recognize and protect the freedom of such persons, and will interfere in no way with any efforts they may make for their actual freedom. For political reasons, the proclamation did not free slaves in the states that supported the Union, nor did it free slaves in the areas around Norfolk, Virginia, and New Orleans, Louisiana.
Most anti-slavery leaders praised the Emancipation Proclamation. They had waited a long time for such a document. But some did not like it. They said it did not go far enough. It did not free all of the slaves in the United States, only those held by the rebels. Lincoln answered that the Emancipation Proclamation was a military measure. He said he made it under his wartime powers as commander-in-chief. As such, it was legal only in enemy territory. Lincoln agreed that all slaves should be freed. It was his personal opinion, but he did not believe that the Constitution gave him the power to free all the slaves. He hoped that could be done slowly, during peacetime.
Lincoln's new policy on slavery was welcomed warmly by the people of Europe. It won special praise in Britain. The British people were deeply concerned about the Civil War in America. The United States Navy had blocked Southern exports of cotton. The British textile industry, which depended on this cotton, was almost dead. Factories were closed. Hundreds of thousands of people were out of work. The British government watched and worried as the war continued month after month. Finally, late in the summer of 1862, British leaders said the time had come for them to intervene. They would try to help settle the American dispute. Britain would propose a peace agreement based on Northern recognition of Southern rights. If the North rejected the agreement, Britain would recognize the Confederacy.
Then came the news that President Lincoln was freeing the slaves of the South. Suddenly, the Civil War was a different war. No longer was it a struggle over Southern rights. Now it was a struggle for human freedom. The British people strongly opposed slavery. When they heard that the slaves would be freed, they gave their support immediately to President Lincoln and the North. Britain's peace proposals were never offered. The Emancipation Proclamation had cost the South the recognition of Britain and France.
The South was furious over the proclamation. Southern newspapers attacked Lincoln. They accused him of trying to create a slave rebellion in states he could not occupy with troops. They also said the proclamation was an invitation for Negroes to murder whites. The Confederate Congress debated several resolutions to fight Lincoln's proclamation. One resolution would make slaves of all Negro soldiers captured from the Union Army. Another called for the execution of white officers who led black troops. Some Southern lawmakers even proposed the death sentence for anyone who spoke against slavery.
In the North, most people cheered the new policy on slaves. Some, however, opposed it. They said the policy would cause the slave states of the Union to secede. Those states would join the Confederacy. Or They said it would cause freed slaves to move north and take away jobs from whites. There also was another reason. 1862 was a congressional election year. The Democratic Party was the opposition party at that time. Party leaders believed their candidates would have a better chance of winning if they opposed the policy. Democrats said the policy was proof that anti-slavery extremists were in control of the government.
As we said, Abraham Lincoln announced the Emancipation Proclamation on September 22, 1862. But Lincoln said he would not sign the proclamation until the first day of 1863. That gave the Southern states 100 days to end their rebellion or face the destruction of slavery.
Some people thought Lincoln would withdraw the proclamation at the last minute. They did not believe he would sign a measure that was so extreme. They said the new policy would only make the South fight harder, and as a result, the Civil War would last longer. Others charged that the proclamation was illegal. They said the Constitution did not give the president the power to violate the property rights of citizens.
Lincoln answered the charges. He said, "I think the Constitution gives the Commander-in-Chief special powers under the laws of war. The most that can be said, if so much, is that slaves are property. Is there any question that, by the laws of war, property, both of enemies and friends, may be taken when needed?"
Just before the first of the year, a congressman asked the president if he still planned to sign the Emancipation Proclamation.
"My mind is made up," Lincoln answered. "It must be done. I am driven to it. There is no other way out of our troubles. But although my duty is clear, it is in some way painful. I hope that the people will understand that I act not in anger, but in expectation of a greater good."
The morning of New Year's Day was a busy time for Lincoln. It was a tradition to open the White House on that day so the president could wish visitors a happy New Year. After the last visitor had gone, Lincoln went to his office. He started to sign the Emancipation Proclamation. Then he stopped. He said,
"I never, in all my life, felt more sure that I was doing right than I do in signing this paper. But I have been shaking hands all day until my arm is tired. When people examine this document, they will say, 'He was not sure about that.' But anyway, it is going to be done."
With those words, he wrote his name at the bottom of the paper. He had issued one of the greatest documents in American history.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.